This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Daniel was an exile living in a pagan kingdom who had a difficult message for a powerful king. God was about to humble King Nebuchadnezzar. What are we supposed to learn from how God humbled this great king? Well, today, Pastor Sam will continue a sermon series through the book of Daniel with a sermon titled, The Greatest Story Never Told, from Daniel chapter 4. It's about Nebuchadnezzar's fall into grace. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
I want us to look at a text this morning that contains one of the most stunning stories in all of our Bible. You know, when we come to this text, often we reduce it to a story on pride. And we sort of excise out of it the moral value of the fact that we shouldn't be proud people and that God humbles proud people. And that's certainly true. God does that. The book of James tells us that God resists the proud. Proverbs has much to say about pride. And so there's no question in my mind, as you and I read the story of Nebuchadnezzar, there's no way to avoid the identification of pride in this man's life and how God humbled him and brought him low. But sometimes that's all we get out of the chapter. We check the pride box off, we dust our hands off, and we quickly move on to the next chapter to find out the next moral lesson we can learn. And when we do that, we miss one of the main things that God is doing in this chapter. I would describe to you chapter 4 as the greatest story never told. It is the story of how Nebuchadnezzar fell to grace. We normally talk about people falling from grace. Nebuchadnezzar fell to grace. I believe by the end of this story, you find a man who has come to genuine saving knowledge of God. When you get to heaven, if I'm right, and I think I am, so let me step away and give you my opinion. I never want to give you my opinion behind that pulpit. But my opinion, as I looked at this text and as I studied what is going on in the text, is I believe that Nebuchadnezzar came to saving knowledge of the Lord. I honestly believe we're going to see him and we're going to perhaps have the opportunity to hear it firsthand from him of how God brought about this amazing salvation. It is the story of how Nebuchadnezzar fell from the pinnacle, from the height of human glory into the depth of God's saving grace. It's also the story of how this king lost a kingdom that didn't matter to gain a kingdom that will never end. It's how King Nebuchadnezzar was given standing in a kingdom far greater in power, far greater in glory, exponentially more valuable than the one he ruled over. And he was given standing in a kingdom that would outlast all other earthly kingdoms. Wouldn't it be something, let me step away from the pulpit again, wouldn't it be something, in my opinion, as we come into that millennial kingdom, I believe that God is going to put his servants over countries that will be in that kingdom. It wouldn't surprise me if God tapped Nebuchadnezzar and said, I have a kingdom I want you to administrate for me, and it's Babylon. Now, you can do what you want with that. Don't write me any letters about that, please. It's opinion, and I'm entitled to one, so if you have a different one, then that's fine. You can be wrong. This is a grand gospel story, isn't it? It's the story in which a great sinner receives a gracious salvation and is made part of a glorious kingdom. And in the middle of the story is the lesson that God wanted to teach Nebuchadnezzar and that he wants every living being on the planet to know. That lesson occurs three times in the chapter. It's stressed three times in the chapter. Let me read its most fullest expression and then show you where the other two times are. It's in verse 17 of chapter 4. And it comes in the middle of the decree that God is announcing to Nebuchadnezzar. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers. The decision by the word of the holy ones. To the end, now here's the reason, here's the purpose for everything God is doing and for why God did it the way he did, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdoms of men and gives it to whom he will and sets over it the lowliest of men. Now that lesson is repeated again in chapter 4, verse 25. And it's repeated again in chapter 4, verse 32. So, how did God bring this lesson to bear in the life of the most arrogant man on the planet at the time? And he did it the same way he brings that lesson to bear in your life and the way he brings it to bear in mine. So I want us to look at the chapter through that lens. And I want us to begin by observing the stunning communication that you see in verses 1 through 3. King Nebuchadnezzar, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. And then he goes on to say this, it seems good to me. In other words, it is delightful to me. This is something I can hardly wait to do. It seems good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures from generation to generation. He's going to end the chapter in almost the same language. Look down, if you will, to chapter 4, verse 34. And we'll go right into the middle of the text. I bless the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. Why? For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, and he does according to his will among the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. Don't miss that line. And so this chapter begins with a stunning communication. It's stunning because of its subject. Who is the one telling the story? King Nebuchadnezzar. And he identifies himself five times in the text. In other words, this is a true testimony. This is a true witness. I, Nebuchadnezzar. It's willingly given. It seemed good to me to do this. It's widely disseminated to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell on the earth, and it comes out of a joyful heart. Peace be multiplied to you. This is stunning because of its subject. It's even more stunning when you think about the content of what he's about to say. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar is about to say something that no pagan king in the ancient world would ever want known, most certainly by would have severely punished anybody who ever talked about this, and it would have been unthinkable for him to have said it himself. And what we're about to see is the humbling of a king. And you see this humbling in chapter 4 when you find out that his kingdom has been taken from him. And you can see that in verse 31. Of the text. While the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar. There is no question who's doing this. What happened to Nebuchadnezzar did not come because there was another kingdom that has somehow outwitted him or outmaneuvered him. There is no question that what is happening because heaven has decided this. In verse 31, while the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you. Nebuchadnezzar, everything that you built, everything that you are taking pride in, all of that has been stripped away from you. And then you discover that for 7 years, this king went out in the fields and literally lived as a beast. It's interesting, isn't it, that in Daniel chapter 7, this kingdom is described in beastly terms. And here is King Nebuchadnezzar, who has treated the world in a very beastly way, one commentator said, and now God is turning him into a beast. There's a period of insanity that comes upon him, and he wants the whole world to know this. He says, listen, I want to tell you about the marvelous and wonderful works that God has done for me, and here they are. And you never would have expected to read what he's about to tell you. And so it's surprising because of his content, and then it's surprising because of its scope. He wants the entire world to know, to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell upon the earth. And it's stunning because of its message. The thing I want you to know out of the humbling that God brought upon me is this, that every living person may know three things. I had to learn these things, and you have to learn these things if you want to live under the blessing of the Most High. Nebuchadnezzar says, here's what this was all about, that every living person would know that God rules over the kingdom of men. That was my problem. I was quite convinced after the events of chapters 1, 2, and 3 that God ruled in heaven, and I was happy for him to rule in heaven as long as he didn't mess around in the kingdom of Babylon where I ruled. I took care of Babylon. I took care of the empire. I am the one responsible for everything that happens here, and I am very, very pleased to honor Daniel's God. I am very impressed with him. I've been very impacted by his power. There's no question about that. But he rules in heaven, and I rule on earth. And before we kind of shake our head at Nebuchadnezzar, let's make sure we don't make the same mistake. I mean, isn't that true? We come to church, and we sing about the greatness of God, and we sing about the faithfulness of God, and we acknowledge the deity of Christ, and we have the theology that we have, and we walk out of here, and as long as God stays in heaven, we are content. But the minute he puts his finger in the kingdom of our life, that's when there's trouble. And Nebuchadnezzar said, you need to know, every one of you in my kingdom, that God rules over the kingdom of men. I thought I ruled over this kingdom. I thought I was the one who had built all of this. I forgot what Daniel told me in chapter 2, verse 27, that God had given me all of this. I forgot that. I didn't forget it mentally, because that's hard to forget. I forgot it really in my life. I refused to submit to that. And I had to learn what I'm hoping you will learn, that God rules over the kingdom of men, and he gives those kingdoms to whom he will. I had to learn that the kingdom I thought was mine wasn't. The kingdom I thought I had earned by might and by right wasn't. And when that kingdom was taken away from me, that's when I began to understand that God had given it to me. And by the way, by the end of the chapter, God restores it to Nebuchadnezzar. That God rules over the kingdom of man, and he gives those kingdoms to whom he will, and he gives them to the lowly, the humble. Before I was qualified to rule even over the small kingdom of Babylon, God had to humble me. And no matter how big your kingdom is or how small your kingdom is, God has to humble you. Because when God gives you a kingdom, he gives you a kingdom because he's seen in your life a humility. And so this is a stunning communication. And Nebuchadnezzar says, if I could sum it up this way, this is the story of how I fell from power into grace. Now, how did that happen? Well, that's the second thing I want us to look at here in the text. And that's in chapter 4, beginning in verse 4 and going through verse 18. I'm not going to read that text to you, but you can multitask. So look at that text. Let those words just kind of sweep over your eyes. And we'll put a heading over this, divine confrontation. The Lord sent to Nebuchadnezzar a dream. Now, We're very familiar with Nebuchadnezzar in dreams now. We had a huge dream in chapter 2 at the very beginning of his reign, in the second year that he came to the throne. Now, toward the end of his reign, comes a second dream. He reigned for 43 years. In the second year, he got a vision. We read about that in chapter 2. The vision of a great image. And the point of that image was this: Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold, but there is a kingdom that is going to smash all of these kingdoms, including your own. And Nebuchadnezzar was duly impressed by that. And so 18 years later, he marches over to Jerusalem in 586 BC, and he destroys the temple and burns the city of the God who sent him that dream in chapter 2. And he comes back in the 20th year of his reign, and he says, you know what? I've been thinking about the dream, Daniel, and I don't think that dream is in play anymore. Because I just was down by Jerusalem. I had a nice visit there. I had the boys with me, the soldiers down there, and they got a little carried away, and they burned the city. And we took down the temple, by the way, but we did save the vessels. We brought the rest of the vessels, so that should make you happy. So I guess that image thing is that thing you talked about, was it 18 years ago or so? I think that's over. I think the kingdom is established. I think it's going to last forever. And to commemorate it, I'm going to build a statue. And we see the statue in chapter 3, don't we? And Nebuchadnezzar had to learn that God wasn't dead, that he hadn't lost his power. He may have destroyed his city, and he may have torn down his temple, but the God of heaven was still able to deliver his people from the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, fast forward another 15 years or so to the 30th or 35th year of his reign. It's coming now to an end. Daniel is in his 50s. He's been serving this king for a long time, and God sends to him a dream. And the dream does the same thing in Nebuchadnezzar's life. The dream comes at a time when he is at ease in his house. He is prospering, and this dream comes, and it alarms him. It terrifies him. The dream is about this cosmic tree that reaches up into the heavens, and then all of a sudden, at the decree of an angelic being, it's cut down. And we find out in verse 15 that the tree is actually a man who's going to become wet with dew and mad like a beast. And all of this is happening because of a divine decree. The God he thought ruled in heaven had decided to interject himself very personally and very actively and very decisively in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom and in his life. Listen to verse 16. Let his mind, this is the decree from heaven, let his mind be changed from a man to a beast, and let seven periods of time pass him. Now, this brought great alarm and great terror to Nebuchadnezzar. And he did what he did the first time. He brought in the same boys that he brought in chapter 2, the Chaldeans and the Magi, and they have the same stellar failure. They come in, and they are unable or unwilling to tell the king the dream. And so who does he call? He calls Daniel. And Daniel shows up, and Daniel is about to give the interpretation. Now, I want you to notice something before we move off this little section in the chapter. In the book, Daniel is the only one who can interpret what comes from heaven. He did it in chapter 2. He does it here in chapter 4. He's going to do it in chapter 5. Daniel, in the whole book, Daniel is the only person in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom who can take the wisdom that comes down from heaven and rightly interpret it. And we shouldn't be surprised, because in chapter 2, verse 21, when we saw Daniel do this the first time in his early 20s, he explained that God gives wisdom to the wise. And we noted that the word wise there was not intellectual, The word wise there was a person who was rightly related to the God of heaven, somebody who feared God. And here in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, when God sent Nebuchadnezzar a dream, he also sent him a Daniel to interpret the dream. Here's another interesting thing. Daniel is the one person in the book who keeps getting the kingdom. Every time you turn around, somebody is giving Daniel more of the kingdom. He gets it in chapter 1. His friends get it in chapter 2. Here in chapter 4, he's definitely elevated in the king's mind as the chief counselor. And then in chapter 5, Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, gives him the kingdom, third place in the kingdom. And then in chapter 6, Darius gives him the kingdom. It's interesting, isn't it, that in chapter 7, and you get to the end of that chapter, verse 27 of chapter 7, we are told that the kingdom will be given to the saints. And here is a foretaste of God doing that. Every time you turn around, Daniel is the only one who can interpret the wisdom that comes down from God, and he keeps getting more of the kingdom. And so you have this divine revelation or confrontation. And then in verses 19 through 27, we could say it this way. God sends Daniel to bring compassionate exhortation to the king. You can see this in verse 19, can't you? Then Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, was dismayed for a while. In other words, he stood there and he didn't speak. And his thoughts alarmed him. Now in verses 4 and following, the king is alarmed and now Daniel is alarmed. You know, it's interesting when the king is alarmed and Daniel isn't alarmed, you know everything's going to be well. But Daniel is alarmed. You ever been on a plane with people and you hit a little turbulence? And if you fly a lot, it's interesting to watch people when they go through this. Some of them start gripping on to the hands of their armrests. Somebody might even take your hand and squeeze it hard. You don't even know this person, and they're like, I just need to hold somebody's hand for comfort, as we might die in this. You see people crossing themselves and doing all manner of things, and they're worried. But if you're an experienced flyer, you look at all of that and you just chuckle. But if the flight attendants are worried, then you start doing those things yourself. You look for somebody's hand to hold, because you know if the flight attendants are worried, there's something to be worried about. And Daniel is worried. He's alarmed. He's not alarmed for himself. He's alarmed for the king. You can see it. He says, oh, king, I wish what I'm about to tell you would be for your enemies. I wish... what I was about to tell you were for those who hate you. I want you to think about the compassion that Daniel has for this king. This king has been responsible for every bit of the pain that has come into Daniel's life. This was the king that brutally ripped him away from his family. This was the king that destroyed his homeland. This is the king that brought thousands of his fellow countrymen into Babylon.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time, so together we can grow in grace.